We have so many players coming into the sport right now, and players that are showing up at tournaments, doing well and beating signed players. You know, there's still going to be changes there. We're seeing changes in MLP, and then we've got all the international stuff coming on board. And so as an unsigned player, you know, we're just constantly trying to figure out what do they want to do and where's their best path forward, right? Because you're looking at a few different things. You're looking at, how do I get sponsored? How do I get my expenses covered? How do I build my brand?
Susanna Barr, welcome to the Behind the Paddle podcast. How are you?
I'm good.
This is an exciting one because the whole point of this podcast is to let people get to know the player behind the paddle, essentially, right? Like fans are able to see highlights, they see play, they understand kind of just like the surface level of who you are as a player, not to mention as a person. And I think the one thing that's been lacking in pickleball is a little bit of the storytelling and understanding more about the person behind the paddle and what brought them to pickleball. You know, especially for you and I at a little bit of a later stage in life, that we're playing a pro sport, you know, into our 40s. I'm not 40 yet, but close, 39. but neither here nor there, but same kind of ideas, you know, what brought these people to this place and time where they're playing a sport at this age when, you know, everybody else our age is in an office job, they're a VP somewhere, they're a manager at a 9-to-5. And we're in a really unique position and a really cool position. So excited to have you on and really want to just to start, dig into when did you start pickleball for the very first time? When did you touch a paddle? When did you hit a ball for the first time? And like, what was that moment? And then also, what were you doing prior to that moment?
Yeah, so I started playing in 2018. I actually bought some cheap Selkirk paddles off Amazon for my birthday. And I honestly, like, people ask me, like, what got you into it? And I never have a really good answer. Like, I just heard about it somehow and thought it sounded like fun and was just kind of looking for something to do. So like, I didn't know anybody who played. I had never really seen it. I did play tennis, and I had started playing some USTA tennis, and then I hurt my elbow moving furniture. It was not tennis elbow. It was a torn tendon from moving furniture at my mom's house, unfortunately. And it pretty much stopped me playing tennis as an adult. And I had moved to Boise. And I thought, oh, I'm going to try tennis again. And pretty much within the first hour, I was like, nope, I can't do that.
Just because of the pain, you're feeling it still?
Yeah. And so I thought, well, I'll give this pickleball thing a try instead. So I bought some cheap paddles, and my son was 10 at the time. And so we just showed up, on a cold February morning. I think it was snowing outside at the local YMCA. So I didn't know anybody. We watched a video on how to play, how to keep score. Yeah. And then went into the gym and played.
Love it.
So yeah, I don't know. Like, it's a weird story. It's like not that exciting, I guess, because I just was kind of like, I was just trying to stay active and find something to do.
For a hobby, right?
Mm-hmm. I had just moved back to Boise, and so I really didn't like know that many people yet. And so, yeah, I thought it'd be fun to do.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't hurt your elbow when you were playing pickleball?
No, that's the surprising thing. Not really. I mean, every once in a while, like if I hit a ball really funny, and certain paddles have irritated it more than other ones. But no, it really doesn't hurt. I wear a brace. Everybody comments on it, but it's really just preventative. I don't want to risk it. But no, yeah, nothing like tennis. And the few times I've gone out, even while I play pickleball and hit a tennis racket, it's like it's so much heavier and the vibration for whatever reason. So, but I mean, I've never looked back. I mean, you know, I love pickleball, so it's great.
And I think I would argue that it is kind of a unique story because in 2018, I mean, there weren't that many people playing. Obviously, there's a little bit going on, but it wasn't like 2020 COVID where, you know, everybody started taking notice of it. This was pre that. And by playing at Hawaii, I'm assuming on hardwood floors in Boise when it's cold. Yeah. So that is like anybody that starts on hardwood floors, that's what I appreciate. And that was, that was like a little bit of a different era. So to be able to find it then and just look at it as like, hey, I'm just going to have something fun to do with my son and go to the Y and try this sport. And then for it to turn into what it's turned into is pretty cool. What were you doing?
Yeah, I mean, definitely got to see a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What were you doing prior?
So at the time that I started playing pickleball, I was an adjunct professor. So I was teaching English, mostly English as a second language, to adult refugees and immigrants. And then I was also homeschooling Porter at the time. So
and this is in Boise? Full-time
in Boise. And then we had just moved to Boise from Seattle.
Got it.
So I had been doing that in Seattle as well. I was full-time mom and part-time college professor. And so definitely a change. I've done a few different things. I've been teaching at the college level I did it total for about 10 years. English as a second language was my interest. I love meeting people from other countries and hearing their stories and just helping them get a better footing in their new life in the United States. I found it, you know, it's something I still want to go back to, even if I do it on a volunteer level. I just find it super rewarding and you just meet some incredible people. So that's what my master's degree was in. And prior to that, I was in the Army. So I did that for 5 years as well. Yeah.
Got it. When did you go into the Army? What age were you?
I was 23. I was 23. So I'd already graduated from college. And I would love to say I went in unselfishly, but I went in to get my college loans paid off and to learn a skill that I wanted, which was to speak Arabic. And so I actually signed up on September 10th, 2001 as an Arabic linguist. So, woke up the next morning and, things changed quite a bit. So I think I always say I was kind of half jokingly that I was the last person to enlist, in peacetime.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. What made you want to learn Arabic?
Yeah. I mean, I just kind of like find these things and go with it, kind of like pickleball. Like, sure. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where it came from. I heard about it and thought it was interesting. a little bit. I kind of do live that way a little bit. But no, I just was always interested in the Middle East. And my undergrad, I studied anthropology and religious studies. And I mean, kind of along the same lines of just, you know, interested in people from other places and traveling and... so I thought the Arabic language was pretty interesting and I'd met a few people from the Middle East and after I graduated from undergrad, I actually worked for like 2 years in corporate offices and realized very quickly that was not for me. I was like, nope, I can't do the 8 to 5 at a desk. So I was going to go back, to school at that stage and went to Middlebury College in Vermont for their summer language program. They have a really great language program and for Arabic and just more out of like, I just want to try do something different. I was planning to go back and get my PhD. And while I was there, I just met a lot of people who were working for the government in different organizations. And they all encouraged going through the military as one of the best options to pursue language skills and kind of see at that time thinking, well, maybe I'd want to do government work. You know, you're just kind of, whatever. I was 20, 23 and not for sure what I wanted to do. And so that's kind of where that all came from. And then when I found out that the joining the military would pay off all my student loans, I thought, okay, that's a pretty good deal as well.
I never pursued it, but I always thought it is, it's such a good route, even like in the route of, cause I have always loved airplanes from being a kid. Like I always thought about being a pilot. I looked at going to Embry-Riddle out of high school, talked to the tennis coach there. So that was always kind of like a interesting path that I would, that I was considering. And I looked at the same thing, like even going into like the Air Force or something like that post college. It's one, you get your, you know, you get all of that flight training, which is incredibly expensive. You get it for free and it's the best training in the world. So I think there's lots of routes like that where you basically, I mean, you get paid to learn it. I mean, obviously right, there's exactly. a sacrifice I mean, of it, being in yeah. armed forces, but.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's obviously, I mean, it's kind of like pickleball, right? Like there's a risk and a reward to a lot of the things that you do. And, so joining the military, obviously there's a risk, you know, and there was a big risk for me as far as potential deployments and, dealing with everything going on after 9/11. But there was also a lot of rewards as well. And I think that's just a lot of life, right? And
yeah.
I mean, it's still that way with pickleball today, right? Obviously, it's that way on the court when you're, you know, deciding to speed up that low ball. There's a risk and a reward. But it's also just with, you know, when you're looking at, you know, do I do this full time? Do I, you know, which tours do I pursue? Which, you know, where, you know, so there's just kind of part of life. And so I think, you know, the military to some degree did teach me a lot and I'm really appreciative of it. And I was incredibly fortunate. I never ended up getting deployed. I did go to North Africa, but I never had to go to Afghanistan or Iraq. And, you know, as an Arabic linguist, that was pretty unusual. And so I'm really pretty appreciative of my time in the military. I was able to get my master's degree while I was in. Got that paid for as well, and you know, learned a lot of skills and created a lot of lifetime friends. And so, you know, for me, it turned out, you know, it wasn't something I wanted to continue to do, but it wasn't, you know, it was a lot of hard work for sure. And but you know, but I benefited a lot from it. So
yeah,
it's not something I would ever go back and change.
What was your role in the and being the linguist, like, were you doing a lot of translations, that kind of thing?
Yeah. So, I was what you would call a, interpreter or not an interpreter, an interceptor. So I wouldn't necessarily be doing interpreting with like, people on the ground, but more just kind of listening in.
Got it.
Listening into to different conversations and things like that. And then having to translate them and, send reports and things. So.
Mm-hmm. And raise your hand if you hear anything funny.
Exactly.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah, that's super fascinating. I think, yeah, not a lot of people listening would probably know that was your background and history. It's really unique and cool. And the reason we have this podcast. But I'm imagining you don't have many opportunities to speak Arabic now. So do you still feel fluent with it, or is it?
Yeah, no, I definitely wouldn't say I'm fluent. I mean, you know, I transitioned from military into teaching English as a second language. So I did have opportunities then. But now it's definitely like, sometimes I'll put on some like Arabic language television shows and it'll start to come back. Like it's always there. Like languages are always there to some degree. And, you know, I'm definitely with the growth of pickleball internationally. I'm hoping to get to the Middle East at some stage. And, you know, and I feel like if I spend a little bit of time ahead of time, I'm going to at least, have enough skills that I can communicate and get around.
I think I definitely wouldn't
consider myself fluid at this stage.
Yeah. There's a YouTube guy. I don't remember his name. Zhao. He's a guy that speaks Mandarin, but also a bunch of different dialects of, you know, Cantonese, Mandarin, all these different languages. And he goes into like Chinatown in New York, and he's like this very white person. And right. He just starts talking in absolute like fluent, like even down to the dialect of wherever the storefront's from. And they're always like blown away. And I always think that's just the coolest thing in the world, is to have that skill of being like a very white person and them just not expecting it.
That happened to me in North Africa for sure. So I was in Tunisia, and they speak French and Arabic. And I don't speak any French. And I would like go up to the shops or, you know, the restaurant or whatever, and I'd be speaking in Arabic to them, and they'd respond to me in French. And I'd keep telling them, like, La te kalam aluka francia. You know, I'm like, I don't speak French. I'm speaking Arabic. Yeah. Can you hear me? And it was like, it couldn't even like cross their mindset.
White,
that
like, white French, talk French.
Yeah, you must be speaking French. And I'm like, I'm speaking Arabic. Please talk to me in Arabic. It was pretty funny. It happened multiple times. I was like, yeah, this is.
Are there any situations like in present day where you're able to pull out some Arabic and kind of people are like, whoa?
I mean, every once in a while, like I'll hear people speaking and I'll kind of, I'll try to listen in or like at a restaurant. I mean, if I meet people, I'll try to greet them or talk to them, and it's kind of fun, you know, it's still something I enjoy. Like, I think the language itself is really a fascinating language, and the culture is fascinating. And, I've not been like turned off from my interest in that at all. But now I've got to learn Spanish because I feel like I keep going to all these Spanish speaking countries. And so that's my current.
Nice. What are you using to learn?
Just Duolingo. Nothing.
Yeah.
Your daily Spanish. But
do you feel like those online programs are, I mean, I know they've gotten much, much better. Do you feel like they're pretty, pretty solid in terms of actually learning languages? And I guess what was,
I mean,
I was just going to say, from your experience of learning a different language, obviously the best way to do it is to be immersed in the language, right? Mm-hmm. Where you don't really have any option other than all you do is hear Arabic, everybody speaking Arabic, it forces you to learn it. Do you feel like you can get enough of a baseline on these like online programs without the immersion?
Yeah, I mean, you'll get your baseline, right? And then obviously, if you can spend time or find people to practice with, that's going to take it a lot further. I mean, I'm a big fan of just finding things you're interested in that language, and then using that as a way to immerse in it. I mean, when I was teaching English as a second language, I had students in my classes with like 20 different languages, so they had to be immersed. But one of my goals as an instructor was always to kind of find their interest. So when they had projects, it like, to me, when you're learning English, it wasn't like I'm going to tell you the topic that you have to study. It's more like, okay, well, what do you really like and what do you want to share, you know, from your life or your interests or your hobbies or whatever. And now let's use English as a way to express that, because it's going to be way more interesting for them, and they're going to learn it much better if it's something that they're interested in. So I think it's the same thing with other languages as well. Like, if you're really into, you know, cooking, then, you know, study and, you know, how to cook in Spanish or whatever, and whatever it might be. And you're going to, you know, learn much quicker than if you're trying to force yourself to study things that you don't actually like.
Totally. Which is like the whole school experience, basically, if you go to like public school, right? It's like you're being forced to memorize some stuff for a test that once you do the test, it completely is wiped away and you don't use that again. So I 100% agree. Like, being able to actually study stuff that interests you and learn through your own interests is something that's not super common, but obviously if you're interested in a subject, you're going to want to know and be more engaged in the learning process.
Right.
With, just to switch a little bit, you mentioned Porter. He started when he was 10. You guys went to the local gym. What's it been like having him along for the ride in terms of, I mean, he's a good player. He's playing a lot. He's doing a lot of videography, YouTube stuff. What's it been like having him along for the journey, and what's his journey been like going from being a 10-year-old to now a 18-year-old?
17, yeah.
17,
I mean, it's been a process, right? I mean, the first, you know, 3 years of pickleball for us was very local. We played regional tournaments. We would travel together. It was a lot of fun. And then as, you know, my career started to take off, I mean, I do think it's one of the challenges that like parents have in general. Like, I think it was definitely a unique experience. And it's not all positive, right? There's negatives as well in the fact of like the parent kind of finding their professional career, right? Whereas you're thinking yeah. more the teenager should be the one who's, you know, going places with the sport. So I think like as a parent, I do think there's some things I could have done differently because I think Porter put a lot of pressure on himself that he had to kind of keep up. Right. Yeah. And even though like as a parent, I was like, no, it's fine. Like have fun. Yeah, right. Have like, fun. like you're still young and you're in school and you have lots of interests and lots of hobbies. But I do think there was a lot of pressure put on him and you know, and it's stuff that we've had to sort through and trying to find for him just having fun playing pickleball again. But I would say that's for any parent with kids in sports, right? Is trying to figure out how do you kind of keep it real, I guess, right? Yeah. Because there's so many expectations that we put upon ourselves. And I think, you know, for him to see, like, he got to see kind of the behind the scenes of the pro scene and, yeah. you know, what's happening with the pro scene and, you know, oh my gosh, if my mom can do this, you know, like, well, then anybody can do this. And I think that, but it was also really fun that we had that connection, and I'm really proud of him and kind of, you know, walking his own path through it, right? Through yeah. the, you know, going from, you know, playing a lot for fun, playing more seriously to understanding like, oh, you know, he really enjoys the photography side of things and the videography and getting kind of into the YouTube. So, I mean, you know, I mean, that had to be his own path that he had to take. And, you know, as a professional, you know, player, I'm like, oh, get out there and practice. Yeah. Right? But, you know, it's not for everybody. And so, so I'm kind of, you know, it's been it's just teenage years, right? He had to go through, growing up, with changes, you know, in our dynamic as I got more serious, into being a pro player. And, but you know, I think it's been great as well. And, you know, he just graduated from, both high school and his associate's degree at 17. Oh, wow. And he's looking to go to college as a junior in January. And so, you know, I mean, he's had to grow up through this, and I'm sure someday we'll sit down and look back and kind of rehash what the whole experience was. But I always love it when he can come to tournaments and he's made so many great friends and connections, and people are always asking me how he's doing. And you know, but the reality is as he got older and school got more important and you know, other things like that, he can't come to all the tournaments anymore. And so
I mean, so he could have his bachelor's by the time he's 20.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is wild.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of did that quick route. I mean, we homeschooled pretty much his whole life. And so he was always a little bit ahead in that area. And then, I mean, it's just with the way schools are set up these days, like you can do usually community college as a high schooler. Sure. And so it's just so much cheaper.
Yeah, totally. To have the associates already is huge.
Right. To get 2 years down.
And it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like nobody looks at where you went your first 2 years, right? It's like where you graduated from.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Yeah. So, but yeah, no, he's still really into photography. He produces my YouTube channel and my podcast, even though we're pretty slow on it because I'm not home all that often right now. Yeah. But he does great photos. And so, you know, I mean, I just think it's like everything else we've talked about, it's a process, right? It's a life process of figuring out, okay, I'm into this one thing and now something else has come along and, you know, what route do I want to take? And, I hope, you know, I guess as a pickleball player, like I hope when he goes to college in January that maybe he joins the pickleball club there. And I think that'll, you know, I do think it was tough for him when we came in to pickleball because there weren't very many young people playing. And so, and still in Boise, there aren't that many young people playing. There's a few more now, but it still hasn't quite hit the youth there. And so I think like, I think for the kids coming into pickleball now, it's much easier because there's so many more kids to play with. And the reality is they want to play with kids. Like they don't want to be out there playing with 30, 40 year olds. He doesn't want to be on court with mom and her friends.
Right.
He wants to play with, you know, just like any other sport with people his own age. So I think like that was a little bit of a challenge that, you know, that we had to deal with was like, he's really good at this sport. He really likes it. He wants to be involved in it, but it's not always fun because there weren't people his age to hang out with and play with. And so that's shifted. So, I mean, I think, you know, now when the kids come in, they have so many opportunities. And so I hope, like I said, I hope when he goes to college, if he wants to, maybe he'll join like the college team and then he can, they'll be like, who are you? Where did you come from? And now you're on this college team.
Is he going to school in Boise or is he going where?
No, he's going to, Appalachian State in North Carolina.
He's going to Boone.
Yeah.
Wow. So I went to UNC Asheville. I mean, tough time for Boone and Asheville right now. Absolutely devastating. Like what's happened. It's crazy. I just look at pictures of like places I used to go and hang out in college and it's a river and it's just the roads are wiped out. It's so bad.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's like, yeah, makes it even more sad. That's like probably my favorite part of the country is the Blue Ridge Mountains, the Smoky Mountains over there. I love it over there. So that's cool that he's going away. I mean, he's going to have a really fun experience, kind of doing his own thing. What made him choose Boone?
He's very independent. So, I mean, he just has friends, actually pickleball friends. Like, so, you know, some of the few kids that were playing when he played, more seriously, one of them, I think one of the girls, I think they won nationals together. Anyways, they live in North Carolina and so he went to visit them this summer. We've stayed friends with them all this time and they went and toured some colleges and he fell in love with it. So
love it.
And I think it's good. You know, like I said, he's independent. I'm proud of that with him and at 17 that he's not afraid to go across the country. And I mean, he's traveled by himself for pickleball tournaments and so he's a good kid. And I think it's going to be exciting to see what he does in the next couple of years.
Yeah, agree. I think the more you could be independent at that age and go kind of explore and travel on your own, which might be tough for the parents sometimes, but you know, it sounds like he's done some independent traveling already, but it's just such a unique experience being able to live somewhere else in your college years and kind of being forced to meet people and be on your own and be self-sufficient. It's that's really cool that he's going to North Carolina.
Yeah. And I'm just hoping like, I'll just have to find tournaments that are in that area and then I'll stop in and bug him. So
that's right. That's right. Be the mom that shows up.
Hey, have you heard of the new Play More app?
No. What is it?
Basically, the Play More app is like a stress-free scheduling app for pickleballers. So I don't know, we've struggled a lot in group text trying to organize play. You'll set it up and somebody will just like the text. And I'm like, does that actually mean you're coming or not?
Yeah. And it's like, you never know how many people you have, like what rating they are. It's kind of annoying.
It can kind of just be a nightmare to try to organize groups because group texts are just not fun. So basically the Play More app lets you send out invitations. You get an RSVP list. If somebody doesn't show, there's a wait list that will actually like put somebody right into.
No way.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Dang, that's awesome. What's it called?
It's called the Play More app. So you should download it at the App Store or you can go to getplaymore.com if you want to look at it online.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the unique aspects of pickleball is that, you know, a 10-year-old can come in with his mom and start playing a sport and they can play it together and play tournaments together. Like that's so unique. to our sport. So very cool. What are your thoughts on, you know, shifting into more pickleball focus? Obviously the landscape's changed a ton. It's still changing. There's stuff popping up. It feels like every couple months of new opportunities, especially for players that aren't necessarily signed on the PPA side. So what are your thoughts and feelings of where we are right now in pro pickleball, and what are your plans moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're still growing, right, as a sport, even though, you know, when we're immersed in it, we feel like it's here and it's huge. And but the reality is the sport's still trying to figure itself out. And I think, you know, I think there's an illusion sometimes of like, you know, oh, people like pro players must be doing so well, or there's these huge contracts, or there's, you know, and the reality is it's still, you know, there's still a lot of risk involved, and you're on your own a lot of the time still trying to figure this out. And I think that's, you know, one of the hardest things, at least for me, is just been trying to figure out like a completely new scene in a way, right? Like something that I'm completely unfamiliar with, playing a pro sport, obviously, is nothing I've ever done before. And then trying to figure out like, how do you make it work? And who, you know, who, I hate to say it almost in a way, who do you believe? Like who's got your back, and who's just trying to make, you know, use you or whatever. And so, you know, that's been pretty challenging. And then, you know, we're all at different stages in life, and trying to figure out, you know, well, what's the right thing for me to do? Like, you know, people obviously ask all the time, like, well, when are you going to stop, you know, competing and playing? And I'm like, well, as long as I'm still meddling, I don't see why I would need to stop. 100%. You know, if I stop meddling or whatever, then, you know, obviously, you know, I'm in the process of just trying to set up what I'm going to do next, right? With as far as being an instructor, as far as being part of a facility and a club. And so, you know, I think, you know, and I know you're the same way, Rob, like we've talked about it before, that a little bit as older players, like we're having to kind of work multiple scenes at the same time. You know, we're focused on playing, and we want to play and we want to do well. But we're also trying to make sure that we have, you know, embers in a lot of different fires so that, we have things to transition into, you know, as the time comes. But, and I think that's just pickleball in general. Like we just can't, you know, the majority of players can't depend on purely playing at this stage. Yeah. The sport isn't big enough for that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that list doesn't go super deep still in terms of playing full time and not needing or wanting additional revenue sources. It's not like you're not gonna have like a real pro athlete and call it baseball that's also like, okay, well I need to also teach some lessons on the side with kids. That, you know, that doesn't exist. But in pickleball, I feel like that'll exist for quite a while. If not forever, you know, who knows, who knows what's going to happen after, what is it, into next year, into 2 years? Whenever those 3-year contracts are up, it's going to be,
it'll be a big shift.
That'll be a big shift. And I don't think it's going to go in the direction of, you know, increasing player money. How could it?
No, I agree. I mean, I think we have so many players coming into the sport right now, and players that are showing up at tournaments, doing well and beating signed players, that, you know, it's like, why would you continue to, I don't know what the correct word is, but to set some players aside as signed players and some aren't. And yet, you know, on any given day, anybody can win. And so, so I do think, you know, there's still going to be changes there. We're seeing changes in MLP. And then we've got all the international stuff coming on board. And so there's still just so much happening right now. And I think, you know, as an unsigned player, you know, we're just constantly kind of evaluating, you know, I think you're evaluating a few things, and I don't think it's just me. I think it's even new players coming on board, right, who are trying to figure out what do they want to do and where's their best path forward, right? Because yeah. you're looking at a few different things. Like there's so much more that goes into being a pro pickleball player than just performing well. You know, you're looking at how do I get sponsored? How do I get my expenses covered? You're looking at, you know, how do I build my brand, right? Which yeah. is something that, you know, I left probably too long because I really didn't understand it. Like I didn't yeah. have anybody guiding me to explain like how important that is for getting sponsors and for getting, you know, even recognition.
The most important, really.
It really is. And recognition yeah. even as an instructor, right? Like yeah. I remember probably 2 years ago was the first time that it suddenly seemed like so much easier to get people to come to my clinics. Mm. And it was like, oh, okay. Like I finally have broken through yeah. that people, you know, recognize me and respect me as an instructor.
Yeah.
But at that stage, like I was committing a lot of work to building that side of my brand, to getting 100%. Known as a quality coach. And yeah. and then I remember like the moment where it kind of hit me like, oh, like all my work kind of finally paid off.
Yeah.
You know, but it was something that like I could have been doing, you know, 5 years ago when I first came in to the pro scene, and I would have been that much further ahead. But I you know, I didn't have anyone sure. to guide me at that stage. So yeah. I really didn't understand that. Yeah. So for new players coming in to kind of understand how important those types of things are, that you can't just rely on hopefully winning prize money or getting a signed contract, to make it. And so, so the scene's just constantly changing. And so, you know, for me, I'm looking at, you know, a few different things going into the next year. You know, I'm looking at, kind of the long term of, okay, you know, when I'm not playing pro pickleball anymore, I need to make sure that, you know, people know who I am and,
yeah.
You know, if I'm still coaching that they want to, you know, still work with me or they want to come to my club or, yeah. you know, whatever that next step is. But then I'm also looking at, okay, how can I still be successful as a pro player? And then, you know, on a more of an altruistic is, you know, what can I do for the sport?
Yeah.
You know, that's given me so much. And so for me, you know, kind of going back to my interest before pickleball of, you know, international travel and mm-hmm. international cultures, it's looking at, you know, how can I help grow this sport overseas? Yeah. So I was really fortunate to just come back from Spain a couple of weeks ago, where we got to do a great exhibition and play in the Spanish Duber Nationals. And meet so many players there and, you know, and so, you know, opportunities like that, as they come up are things that I definitely like jump on. Right. Because yeah. It's good for me. You know, I want a little prize money and met new people and, you know, help build my brand, but also like, it's something I really love and I love yeah. giving back, and helping others, you know, find this and for it to grow and for the next people coming in. So, you know, I'm just kind of looking at all of that and, I think a lot of players at, you know, all ages and levels kind of go through this process of like debating, like how much, I don't know, like how much time and resources do I commit to trying to be like my best pickleball player
yeah.
versus how much time and resources do I commit to other aspects of my life.
At this stage, what would you say, like in terms of where you're at as a player, in terms of what you're looking mm-hmm. at, you know, call it post-pickleball. I see you playing and as long as you like it and want to do it, I see you continuing to play all, you know, all the way up until seniors, if you wanted to, and still being successful, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, my goal and that's like my main focus for sure. And so I think, you know, I always have a little bit of like those doubts. I don't think that's unusual for people to yeah. kind of doubt where you're at. And then like just being on the road so much is kind of been a little more wearing this year than the last couple of years. So I definitely feel that. So I'm always like thinking in my head, okay, how do I get regrounded here? How do I get back to like really focusing on like my strength training and my drilling and like on improving my game still? Because I mean, that's one of the things with pickleball is that I feel like you can always improve. Like you can be the best in the world and there's still something new that you can add to your game. And so like, I definitely like have those thoughts and I'm always hoping things will slow down just a little so I can like spend a little more time. So, I mean, that's, you know, definitely my main priority and what I want to try to, you know, balance a little better this next year is kind of that balance of let's take the time that I need to stay at the top of my game. Because I feel like if I don't put in the work, then, you know, I am going to lose that edge quicker.
People are getting better. People are practicing when I think about this, like people are out there playing right now. And, I feel like I have a lot of reps under my belt, but at the same time, if people are working harder, especially if they're younger, you know, more spring in their step, they're gonna catch up. They're gonna be good. So to ride on what we have and the ability and skills that we have currently is not gonna be quite enough. Like we're gonna have to go to the lab and develop new shots and develop new strategies and be able to also improve. And I think that's what even where I'm at now, I started a little after you. I first touched the paddle at the end of 2019. I think why I love pickleball so much, you know, especially thinking about like people that know that I played tennis in college, they're like, well, do you not ever want to hit tennis? I'm like, no, I'm never going to be as good at tennis as I was when I was 22. So, but with pickleball at 39, I still feel like I can get better. I still feel like I haven't reached my potential, which is it's a fun feeling in terms of knowing that there's still room to grow.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the biggest appeals of pickleball to us as pro players, but even to amateurs is that, I mean, that's the reason like we'll have a horrible game and we'll be like, I never want to play again. And then the very next day we're itching to go back out and try to like figure out what we did wrong or how do we improve that or how do we fix it? Because there is always something and it's way more achievable than, you know, a sport like tennis. For most people. Right. And so, you know, like, yeah, I mean, I have a list of things that I want to work on. I constantly have a list, you know, running through my head or written down of, and some of it's shots and some of it's, you know, just strength training and footwork. And then some of it's like mental game things that I want to improve on myself. And, you know, and I go from one tournament and I finish it and I reflect back and I think, okay, like, what can I do differently next time? Like, what do I need to improve on? And even just this summer, I felt like, you know, and there's ups and downs constantly in any sport. And so, I mean, I felt like even this summer, there were some mental game things that I really had to sit down and look a little harder at myself and you know, figure out, you know, what can I do that's going to give, you know, give me a little better edge. And it's not perfect, but I can tell a few of the things that I've implemented have made a difference. And even if it's not a difference in my results, it's a difference in how I feel on the court.
It's a bigger deal.
And like you said, it's like, as long as I'm still enjoying it and having fun and, you know, finding it worthwhile, you know, then I want to keep doing it. I mean, even if it, you know, I always, you know, say like for myself, like, yes, the results are important, right? We all want to win, right? We're all here because we're competitive and we want that. And, you know, but like, I know that I'm happiest when I just feel like I played my best.
Yeah.
Right. And so even if it's not the best result, but I feel like I played a solid game, you know, I can stomach that.
Totally. So there's a few things, and this is kind of talking about the near future, looking into 2025. There's obviously the APP, which, you know, we both have played consistently over the past couple of years and really helped, in my opinion, keep that tour not totally us, right? But like kept it relevant in terms of having high level players still play on the ADP. Obviously you have new players coming in. You have, you know, like the Will Howells, and CJ's turned into a great player. And you have these players that are obviously coming up. But I think, you know, we've been a pretty solid staple for them to have some consistency for their tournaments. Are you planning on playing? I think they have another 12 or 13 next year, which in my opinion is much lower than I was hoping. I was hoping for at least like 16 and having more of a steady flow, because we've played what, two tournaments in 3 months for the APP right now. And it just feels like a huge lull. It makes me search for other things to play, which, you know, a tour shouldn't want their players searching for other opportunities, but I am, because I've got to follow the money. Like I've got to follow like, okay, this is our window to make some money in the sport.
Yeah. I mean, it's both making money and it's keeping your reps in and your edge. And so, yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, I'm still planning to play APP next year. You know, I mean, I do think it's a little harder to find, like, to deal with like partners on the APP. And so I'm having some challenges with that because players are, you know, constantly in flux. And, you know, like you said, they're looking at what all opportunities are there. And so, you know, with, you know, some players committed to MLP and some players, you know, playing PPAs or international, like that's been a bigger challenge, is trying to kind of get some consistency as far as, partners go. And I think that's going to continue to be an issue on the APP tour, going into next year. I agree with you. I was definitely hoping for more tournaments because, you know, I mean, if you are looking to make money at tournaments and there's only a few of them, now you have to go find other avenues. I mean, you know, unfortunately they already had to cancel their December tournament, which I understand, like there's nothing they could do about it. But
is the facility just not ready, or
I believe so, or maybe the hurricanes or something affected it. But I mean, already this morning, you know, I was in conversation of, okay, well, do I need to try to set up a camp or something? Like, what am I going to do in place of this now? Which is just the conversation I don't want to have. Now you're pulling me away from being able to compete and keeping my focus on that. You know, well, so I mean, again, I don't blame them. I understand, you know, there's things that you can't control, but it made me have to have that conversation, which made me kind of sad. Like, as much as I love teaching I love my students. I mean, I was a teacher, you know, before pickleball. But you know, that hadn't been in my plans. And to have to like now feel like I have to go like scramble, you know, to find income, I guess, in a way, is a little frustrating.
With that one being moved, it basically, our last APP now is what, Boca in November, like mid-November, something like that. So so there's going to be a break from like mid-November to mid-January.
Two months.
It's a massive break.
And it's holidays.
What I was considering doing is there's a PWR in China that I know Megan and Ryla are going to, and then there's one, I think the following week in Vietnam, which I was considering going to China. There's a corporate event that I was also looking at doing, but now that there's, like, China was going to be tough because I don't want to go and then have to hustle back to the APP at the fort. But if I can go to Asia and stretch it into a 3-week thing where I go from China to Vietnam to taking a week to enjoy myself in Thailand or something, like, that's now that that's opens that option. Door of like of teaching a little bit, playing a little bit. So now that tournament's moved, it makes that more of like a legit option to play a couple of tournaments, teach some, enjoy the travels over December. So I'm thinking about that, but who knows.
I have to look into that too. But I mean, like you said, I mean, that it definitely, you know, makes us have to look at what other events are out there and you know, I mean, and that was part of like going to Spain. You know, obviously I wanted to because it's a place I'd never been to, and I went with great friends and amazing people. But it, you know, it was tiring to turn right around and travel across the Atlantic again. But you know, you're looking, you know, we're kind of looking for those opportunities. And
that's the unique thing is it's on the fly of, okay, this tournament's gone, so we got to figure out now what's our plan 2 months from now. Or, you know, if it's China, mm-hmm. I lived in Beijing for a little bit, for about 6 months, when I was 20, first time out of the country. So, and I haven't been back to China since. So I think it would be fun to get back,
right?
But I know the visa process isn't super easy. Okay. And so it's like that though. It's like, you know, this tournament's canceled now. So now we're scrambling. Do we do this? Do we get a visa? I'm doing it without, you know, I've never had an agent. I've kind of managed and navigated all of that solo, just because I feel like I've had the time, and I don't think necessarily that an agent would be able to garner enough value for me to, you know, earn the 20% based on what I can just do for myself. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's silly. Maybe I should just hand it off so I'm not thinking about it. But I enjoy it. Like, I enjoy kind of mm-hmm. looking at opportunities, and rather than having mm-hmm. somebody just come to me and say this and this.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, that's the nice thing with having that flexibility is I've had some amazing experiences through pickleball that I wouldn't have been able to do if I was contracted.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I went to like West Virginia in July. I met the director at the airport in Seattle coming back from India. So just a random, he recognized me and just a random connection. We stayed in touch.
Suzanne, you're famous.
I know, right? Right. It's so weird. And then, it just turned out that weekend, I was available, because we had a pretty big lull in tournaments over the summer. And I was like, you know what? Okay. I'll go to West Virginia. Right.
Yeah.
And had no idea what to expect.
It's beautiful. You know, it's a beautiful state.
Honestly, it was really beautiful, and they treated us so well. And was able to bring in some other pro players to help build their tournament some, and walked away with a pretty decent paycheck and made some awesome friends. And so, already that one's, you know, on my list that if I can make it, I'll be back again next summer. You know, so there are those opportunities out there. But I think that's probably one of the things that, you know, people don't realize going into looking at pro pickleball players is how much we're constantly like balancing.
And also the partner thing, you're right. And, trying to manage the logistics of partners for tournaments. If you don't have a set partner for the year, that's I'm scrambling right now for Newport, from my own doing. I've just been doing other mm-hmm. stuff, and I haven't, but I have to find a men's partner for Newport, which is in like 3 weeks here. And because mm-hmm. I'm playing with Jack, but Jack's playing MLP that weekend. So, you know, and the other people I've asked to play are also playing MLP. And then, so it's a real thing trying to juggle partners and manage schedules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wish we don't a lot of times get to know our schedule very far in advance. And so I know, you know, we're all going, what does next year look like? What's next year look like?
Yeah.
Can you give us anything? Give us some information so we can start to plan things out. So, I mean, there are, you know, those parts of like, there's so many positives, but then there's those parts of pro pickleball that are very, you know, you're handling a lot, because it, you know, it's still a new sport, and, you know, we're essentially trying to, in a way, make it on our own, in this sport. You know, we're not part of a team. We're not. You know, I mean, you are when you're on MLP, obviously you get drafted and you're part of a team, and it's nice. They handle a lot of things for you. But for the rest of it, you know, and I'm sure it's very similar to tennis and, you know, other sports on the lower levels where, you know, as the player, you're making that choice.
You're hustling to figure it all out.
Hustling and balancing and just trying to do your best. And it's really fun for those of us probably like you that did not enjoy sitting in a corporate office from 8 to 5. I would much rather be, you know, having all the variety. I mean, I'm sitting in a hotel in Columbus, Ohio right now. You know, and, you know, just having kind of those experiences is much fits my personality much more. But it's also, you know, it's a lot of work and it's not always glamorous. And, it's exciting. We're going to see what happens next. That's the thing that I found is like, every time I like start to get a little worried, like, okay, well, you know, I got to make a decision, right? Like, do I play MLP? Do I not? Do I, you know, do APP? Do I not? Or whatever the case might be. You know, usually once you've made that decision and you've gone down that path, like it's turned out okay. And and
couple questions here just to kind of wrap things up. So you're on an MLP team now. I'm assuming you're also looking at the PWR team league in January and that draft that's going to happen. Is that a one or the other thing? Like if you play India, is that a no for MLP moving forward, or what is the situation there?
I've not actually heard anything on that. Obviously like for MLP, once the season ends in November, then we are released from MLP.
So you're not still on that team.
No. So the players that aren't contracted get released at the end of the year.
Got it.
So we would go back into a player pool to potentially be drafted again. If we want to play MLP again. So I guess like I don't think any kind of drafts will happen for MLP until a little bit later, because the season doesn't start until a little later, is my understanding. So, I mean, I would think as a free agent, there shouldn't be any conflict with playing India, because India is in January. I think the bigger, you know, the bigger issue with MLP is just trying to balance the MLP schedule with your other tournament schedules. What's a little harder. And then with MLP, I mean, I love MLP. I love playing on a team. I love the atmosphere. But the reality is you can be traded or dropped at any time. And then that completely changes what you thought you were doing. And so,
especially if you're on a team where, you know, Jeannie Bouchard gets picked.
Brutal.
What are they doing? To wrap here, what are you most excited about in the next couple of months, and where can people find out more about what you are up to, whether it's coaching, whether it's camps, whether it's playing?
So the next couple of months, so if I say before the end of the year, what am I most excited about?
Pickleball or not pickleball, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's a good question. I do have a few cool locations that I'm going to. So I am going down with Dominic Catalano, and I are going down to Tres Palapas in Mexico to teach some camps in December. So right around
Christmas. Wanted to go there.
Christmas in Mexico. So I'm kind of excited about that. And, you know, we're just going to stay. We're hoping some friends of ours are going to come down too and actually have a real vacation that I've not had in a long time.
With no pickleball.
Yeah, after the camps. You know, we got to teach the camps first.
But gotta have a little pickleball.
I'm excited for that. Cool. And then I'm also just excited for, we haven't really talked about it, but I'm one of the co-founders of a 18-court indoor club in Boise called the Flying Pickle. And so I'm excited just for some of the things that we have coming online for that. We've got our first major tournament, $17,000 prize money.
Awesome.
And so I was able to talk some pros into coming and playing it. So I'm just excited to be able to kind of grow our club there and offer some cool opportunities. And, you know, we always keep bringing in more players to train and get better. And so I think there's a lot happening on that side. And then obviously I'm excited for Porter starting college. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of great things coming down in the next couple of months, and you know, just seeing how some tournaments go. Got some fun ones coming up, and MLP, we're on track to make the playoffs. So definitely excited for my team to hopefully surprise some people. And yeah,
love it.
And
love
then
it.
People, more information,
people wanna,
you can
yeah, people want to so, follow you.
Yeah, I mean, so definitely on Instagram is probably the easiest place. That's the social media that I use the most. Susanna Barr, period, PB, I believe. I do have a YouTube channel and a podcast, the Pickleball Academy. We want to keep it more updated. The podcast is called High Performance Pickleball. You know, we just have it. We're just not super consistent on it because we're just kind of ground roots doing it on our own at this stage.
Takes, especially like when you're doing instructional stuff like that, where you want to have graphics and video. That's a tough one to roll out.
Right. I recommend if you're interested to listen, go back through our podcast because it's me. It's a high level coach who's taught like pro tennis players at like the Australian Open, and then also my sports performance coach. And so we really focus really on just how to improve your pickleball game. So we don't love do it. A lot of the drama, even though that gets a lot of views.
But also what gets a lot of views, Susanna, is tips on pickleball. Honestly, probably the
tips
most.
On pickleball
what people
very
love
well.
The most.
Yes.
Wild.
Yes. 100%. So yeah, if you follow my Instagram, you're going to see a lot of training videos, a lot of drills. I put out a lot of drills as a instructor and as an educator. That's probably was my favorite part of teaching back when I taught at the college level, and now as a pickleball coach, is getting to be creative. So if you didn't get that idea yet, as I was talking about like teaching English, how I'm always coming up with creative ways for them to use the language. I like to do the same thing on the court. And so you're going to find a lot of different drill ideas. So make sure to follow me, and thanks for having me on, Rob.
Oh, it was a blast. It was very, very cool to get to know some of your backstory and what led you to pickleball. And this will come out, and I'll keep you posted when it does, so you can share it with your audience. So thanks so much, Susanna.
Sounds good. Thank you.